We're here for the Titleist End Podcast, episode 129, to celebrate something we never thought would happen. Even in our wildest dreams at the start of the season, this seemed like something that was out of reach, completely beyond our wildest dreams. I am, of course, talking about Dave Handbags Harris winning the Titleist End Prediction League.
Woohoo!
Oh, and we finished third in the championship as well. So, yeah, that was pretty nice as well. We will be talking about not just Mr. Harris's victory, but our place in the playoffs. We are there. We will be taking on Fulham at Craven Cottage in front of a sold-out away allocation. We'll get onto that, don't you worry, on Saturday before bringing them back to the Medeski Stadium on Tuesday. I hope you're ready for those playoff nerves because they're coming thick and fast. We will look ahead to that game and reflect on our final day win at Burton, all on this Titleist End Podcast. As I said, it's episode number 129. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetitleistend.com, and I am joined for today's show by the victorious, conquering, hulking hero that is Dave Handbags Harris. Dave, hello.
Good evening.
Proud of yourself, are you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, but
yeah, understated as ever, just like Amsterdam.
Yeah, Johnny's not qualified for the podcast on account of losing, so what we've got in instead is Mr. Mark Mayo. Mark, hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Not so bad, thank you. Do you think you would have won the Prediction League over Dave Harris?
Well, I've had a good year in terms of Super 6 and Fantasy League this year, so I feel quite confident that my skills are doing well at the moment.
We'll talk terms, but you are in line for a place in next season Prediction League if you keep up this form. We're going to elevate you. We're going to promote you.
Yeah, I'm currently in a playoff with Hoops and Bucks of Oil. Yeah. And maybe do a playoff run in.
So. Absolutely.
Did you manage to nail any accumulators though? Did you financially gain from predictions this season?
Hashtag gambler.
Not so much financially gain, although I have stuck a tenner on Reading winning the playoffs because it's 5-1 and there's only four teams, and that's kind of value, isn't it?
Yeah, but I thought Leeds are the favourites. Aren't Leeds going up? That was my impression from most of the season.
That's what they were singing.
They've probably got shorter odds than us, even so.
Going up to seventh.
Before I get too many threats from Leeds fans, we will move on. As I said, we've got lots to talk about. We've got the playoffs to look forward to. And of course, we'll start by looking back on the final game of the regular season, which was Burton 2, Reading 4.
View from the Titleist End.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So guys, we went into this game knowing that if we won, we would finish third in the championship and set up a game with Fulham. It was a prospect that, I'm not going to lie, I wasn't massively looking forward to in the build-up. But then when the game drew nearer, I was like, do you know what? Let's go and win this game. Let's get that third place. Maybe it was because I saw the fact that Fulham was at 5:30 on a Saturday and I thought that was more appealing than a trip to Yorkshire at 12 o'clock at midday. But for whatever reason, I hoped we were going to do it, and we did it. In fact, the way results went elsewhere, we didn't even need to win in the end because Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday both lost. So it was a win-win. But Dave, third in the championship, that is our seventh best finish in our history.
It's phenomenal. You say at the start of the season, we were just hoping for perhaps a mid-table top half finish, but to finish third and with 85 points. And I haven't actually looked at the stats, but that's more than enough in many seasons to get a side automatic promotion. It's only the fact that Newcastle and Brighton have been bouncing off each other that have we been that a little bit unfortunate in that regard. But third place, you've got to say hats off to them, even though we haven't exactly been convincing all season. It's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal finish.
Mark, where does this rank for you? I mean, season, we've been saying it's the seventh best finish in the club's history. Has it felt amongst that sort of excitement? And we've seen the other six within the past decade.
It feels weird, doesn't it? Because during that, like the period of the six where we were kind of in the Premier League, etc., it felt natural to be watching a Reading team. Oh, we'll be in the playoffs this year. We'll go and we'll turn on the style. We'll get a few 4-0 wins against the bad teams. And I think it's because we haven't had those moments to look back and think, wow, we absolutely killed a team today. It does feel a little bit unnatural. And also because of the last 2 years as well and the disappointment we've had and just the kind of low self-esteem as a club that you get from a result of those finishes. So it feels a little bit different, but it still feels good.
Do you think it's a case, Dave, that maybe that we've just been a little bit spoiled? So we perhaps don't cherish this finish as much as maybe we would have in years past?
I don't know. I think it's just pure the lack of expectation. And that's borne itself out in attendances this season. There's no expectation really on this side. And there hasn't been all season. I think you look at the style of play to all intents and purposes, a lot of supporters haven't actually bought into it, despite the fact that we've won 26 games this season. So I think that's played a part in it. There is an element, yes, that you could argue of being spoiled, but certainly over the last two seasons, when you know the standards that this club has set since 2002, when we were promoted, and you know, arguably before then, yeah, we have been a little bit spoiled. But I don't think that plays too much in the grand scheme of things.
Okay, we talk about maybe not making it there in style, but you couldn't really disagree with the manner that we finished the season, scoring four goals away from home. We hadn't scored four goals in a game for the entire season. So, you know, we left the best till last. Got a little bit hairy towards the end after going into a 3-0 lead. But Dave, you were there. Was this where does this rank in the best Reading performance of the season? Did it deserve the first four-goal haul?
Yes, I think we could easily have scored more. Jordan Obita was unlucky earlier in the second half. Joseph Mendes was unfortunate in just before half-time. And you know, at 3-0, it was coasting time. I mean, Burton had only created one real chance of note from open play when Al Absey pulled off the fantastic save when they hit the bar. But in the first half, in particular, it was a little bit kind of... I wouldn't say edgy, but open. But Burton didn't really carve us open. The only chance they actually created was from a set piece at the far post, a header from the far post. Sorry. So in terms of the number of chances that we actually created on the day, four goals was easily just reward.
Yeah, you talked about Jordan Obita being unlucky in a moment there. I think we're going to have to take a minute to mark. Did Jordan Obita go for goal for his effort?
No, this is a cross that has hit the far post and gone in fortuitously. This is, I can't imagine he'd have met that, purely because he's not the type of player who shoots from range, is he? He got the goal at Ipswich a few months ago, but otherwise I don't think he really has a pop so often, does he?
Not so often, but he is known to put in a little lace behind the ball occasionally.
Yeah, he's got skill. I mean, we've said this many times. He sees himself, he's been on interviews saying that, you know, I see myself as a number 10 in an ideal world. So it's clearly... he's got some shooting boots. However, he got the goal. You mentioned as well the man that got the first one, Joseph Mendes. He's a man now that's got three goals in his two starts. Mark, is he making a strong case to start at Fulham? I mean, we'll talk in detail about that. But how impressive have you been with? Have you been with Joseph since he's come into the side?
Well, massively. I still don't think I've seen him play in a league game because he hasn't turned up at the Medeski so much, has he? He's always been. Away from home that he gets played. And I think he's kind of the secret weapon that we've got against Fulham, because they're not going to, you know, they're going to know obviously what he did at Villa and what he did on the weekend, but they're not going to have a massive dossier on his style, certainly not in the way they know Kermigan and Lewis Grabban. They'll know their games far better. So he is a secret weapon. I'd be tempted to start him at Fulham. I certainly wouldn't blame Stan for doing so.
What was his performance like over the whole game though, Dave? He scores that goal in the third minute, but did he keep up that sort of performance level?
He was raw. You could argue there's a question over his first touch and actually his finishing. When he was through on goal, as I say, just before half time, he actually put the shot well wide, although he did have a defender that was keeping him company. But it was hard working. And certainly, if remember we played Dominic Samuel earlier in the season, who looked thoroughly unconvincing. The impression that I get with Joseph Mendes is that he's there's more to him. There's a lot more to him. He's a lot more physical. He's pacey. He's three goals in two games suggests that he can finish. And certainly going by the finish at the first goal at Villa, you can't really argue that. So you know, reasonably impressed. He was constantly on the move, constantly looking for the ball in behind. And Burton did leave a fair amount of space in behind. So there's more to come from him. But yeah, reasonably impressed. Impressed enough to suggest that he should be in and around the first team squad.
Yeah, as Mark said, it's nice just to have that extra option, that weapon, because it's been one of the key arguments this season, particularly before the January loan signings of the likes of Lewis Grabban, was that where are the other options for him? I mean, Yaku Mate, very raw as well. Dominic Samuel wasn't overly convincing in his time here.
Hasn't been at Ipswich either, really.
No, he's dealing with injuries, but yeah, he's not exactly shown he's crying out to start a championship level. So it's nice to have those extra options. Jan Kermigan doing what he does best, goal number 18 of the season, just a fantastic season. I mean, we talked quite a lot about Jan in the past couple of weeks, but Dave, fitting that he capped off the season with a goal.
Yeah, and an extremely well taken goal as well. And it's nice to actually have a pullback that actually found one of our players. All too often, we've managed to get in behind this season and around the flank and play a ball across, and it's been cut out by a reasonably well positioned defender. But yeah, he's had a fantastic season and really proved his worth to the side.
The big talking point going into the game was, what would Yapstam do in terms of team selection? Now, he did make the changes, but the most heavily changed area was the defence. And we saw the welcome return of Paul McShane to captain the side at Burton. He was joined as well in the back line by our record signing, or reportedly record signing anyway, Thiago Alori. He gets a start as well. I think that's his first start since his debut up at Derby. Mm-hmm. So he clearly likes that area of the country. Yeah. So he gets to start alongside McShane in a back five. Dave, did it work for you? We did concede two goals.
In the second half, we conceded two goals, yes. In the first half, with McShane on the pitch, it was well marshalled. As I said in the opening gambit, that Burton didn't actually create a chance from open play. The only chance that they had, as I say, was from the set piece, which occasionally is going to happen. But certainly with McShane on the pitch, marshalling the back five, back three, back five, it was pretty solid. And they only conceded the two goals when we went 3-0 up, and they clearly took their foot off the gas. The manner and the nature of the two goals conceded was questionable.
They were
very, very sloppy.
Especially the first one.
Yeah. With the ball played to Lloyd Dyer with nobody in behind George Evans covering. It's like, hello, wake up. But, you know, we still have more than enough in the tank, I felt, and as it proved that, you know, we could actually go on, still win the game and still manage to score. I wasn't overly concerned with the two goals conceded. The fact that we did concede more than that, the manner, and the fact that we can cut that out.
Burton will be a very different proposition to Fulham. And again, I'm wary about discussing it too much, but just based on what you saw in the Burton game, would you have any worries about seeing that same defensive unit on Saturday?
I wouldn't, provided they were a little bit more direct. They did play it around the back, as they always do, and certainly looked to play from goal kicks and the ball in keeper's hand. There were opportunities there, I think, for Burton that I think Fulham would be a lot more ruthless with, which concerns me. So I think we would need to be certainly a lot more prudent with our ball playing around the back and look to be a bit more direct.
We all sort of know what we get from Paul McShane, and we thankfully seen quite a lot of him. But Thiago Alori, as mentioned, I mean, it's just his second start. He's had a couple of appearances off the bench as well. What have you made from him in the short bits of action you have seen overall, including that sort of Derby game?
Rusty. So he's not really had any opportunity to get any rhythm to his game yet. So we haven't seen anywhere near the best of him, but I mean, he's lightning quick. Once he takes him a while, one of those players, a bit like Brynjar Gunnarsson, it takes him a while to start getting up or to get up to speed. But once he's up there, I mean, there was one point in the first half where a Burton striker had about 2 yards on him, and Alori was just about keeping pace. But once he actually got those legs moving, by Christ, it was ridiculous how quickly he ate up the ground.
Yeah, you wonder whether
so quick.
You wonder whether that's a plan to deal with a certain Mr. Sessegnon as well up at Craven Cottage. But again, I don't want to stray too much into that just yet. I don't want to spoil the ending of the show. I don't want to give people any excuse to turn off. Anyway, 4-2 win. The championship in the books. Final day done and dusted. Mark, we say goodbye to Blackburn. They, despite winning their final game this season, they are down thanks to results elsewhere at Forest and for Birmingham as well. That means we've lost Blackburn, Wigan and Rotherham. But we will gain Bolton. We will gain Sheffield United and one of Bradford and Millwall. And then coming down, we know that Middlesbrough and Sunderland will be in this division. Hopefully we won't be, so this will be a moot point. But overall, are you happy with the changes to the championship next season?
It's pretty much like for like, isn't it, really? You've got one Northern side out, one Yorkshire side out, one Lancashire side in. I don't fear Sunderland and Middlesbrough as much as I feared Norwich and Newcastle coming down. I think those teams have a lot more rebuilding to do. Middlesbrough are probably going to hit the ground a little bit sturdier because effectively they are a championship team already. So I think they'll keep their units together. I don't think Sheffield United, I mean, they're signing Ched Evans, and all the politics aside, he's not that good a footballer at the moment. He didn't do particularly well at, is it Chesterfield he was at? So.
Yeah.
I don't think Bolton are going to have much investment, so I don't foresee the championship getting any harder for next season.
Dave?
pretty much that. It's very much of a muchness. I mean, Bolton, they've still got their financial problems, and their squad is vaguely similar to that which actually went down two seasons ago, or last season. I think there'll be a different proposition under Parkey, but Parkey is so far utterly flopped at Championship level. His style of football is a little bit too pragmatic. He needs subtle nuances to his tactical game. I think Sheffield United will be a tough nut to crack, and they'll certainly hold their own in the division. Bradford and Millwall, I think Bradford, I think they'd struggle, and they would need some serious investment. I don't think that they would be quite riding the crest of a wave. One thing they would have going for them is their support. It's magnificent in number. Millwall, I mean, we all know what Millwall are about. They're a League One Championship yo-yo club at the moment. The most they would think they would be able to hope for really is mid-table Championship. I don't think they would actually pull up many trees, particularly with Neil Harris in charge. Again, it's a bit like Parkey. You look at their style of play, and it's literally based around lumping the ball up long to Steve Morrison and the other guy up there who scored 18 goals. So I'm not too worried about the sides coming up. I think we would have more than the measure of them if we stayed down. Sides coming down, again, Sunderland, they have a massive rebuilding job. If they keep David Moyes, though, and I think they give him a full season and a little bit of investment, I think he might just be able to do something.
I think certainly you just made yourself very unpopular amongst Sunderland fans.
Well, he's staying, isn't he? Let's face it. Let's stay. He's staying. Middlesbrough, it depends on who they appoint. I mean, if Steve Agnew's in charge of them at the moment, yeah. Does he stay, or is he just temporary? Who do they appoint if he goes? You can't really predict what they'll do, but they've proven with good tactical acumen at this level that they're a match for most sides, having been promoted last season. And who else is in the mix? You've got Hull,
Swansea, or an outside chance of it being Crystal Palace. I think it's going to be one of Hull or Swansea, though, realistically.
I think Hull are a little bit of a basket case, and I think as soon as they go down, they lose their Portuguese manager. I
thought you were about to say another word beginning with B. I was about to hit the bleep button.
No, not quite. But it would be quite nice if we could swap places with Swansea after what happened in 2011.
Yeah, would be quite nice. Yeah, I think I'm with you, Mark. I don't see the Championship being very much more difficult next season if we do stay down. Not like the fear, as you said, that you had when you saw big teams like Newcastle taking the plunge. So, yeah, I think if we are in the league, I'm slightly disappointed that there's not more local games coming into the division. I mean, Millwall would be the lone exception to that rule. But, yeah, a very, very northern-looking Championship again next season.
And we could be losing Fulham as well.
Indeed. Yes, well, hope not. It is. We will have a North v South Championship final no matter what happens.
Yeah.
So one to look out for. Anyway, that about wraps up the recap. So we'll have lots more talk about the Fulham game coming up in any other business. But in the meantime, we'll move on in to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, after last week's bumper edition of News Bites, which seemed to go on forever and ever and ever, this week we're down to just a couple of stories. First one is I'll hand over to you, Mark, because you carried out an interview with a member of Reading Council talking about the Royal Elm Park development.
Yeah, it was with a guy called Ashley Pearce, who's a Labour councillor for the was on the planning committee and has been involved as a Reading season ticket holder and as a member of the council in the whole Royal Elm Park development, and that's been approved on the latest plans. There are tons more planning and approvals and all kinds of stuff that needs to come, but it's currently at a stage where it looks like it's chugging along. Yeah, we chatted some good stuff. There's some stuff on the Greyhound track and actually who owns that. It's not the club or the council, so the kind of confusion over the future of that and how that might affect everything. The Green Park railway station is due for late 2018, as we chat about. And there's just some stuff about how the ice rink and all... What was the decision process for the people who want to build it and how the council dealt with it?
Absolutely. You can head over to, on this, if you're listening and you subscribe via iTunes or any other notable, reputable podcast provider, you can listen to that on the feed. It was released on Monday morning, so just go have a look for that. You can also head over to thetarlhurstend.com to listen via your browser as well. And Just the last bit of news bites is a bittersweet one for the three of us sat around this table. Fulham tickets were released for the both a home and away legs. You've got till Wednesday if you're a season ticket holder to buy your ticket for the home leg, and it's up to two per season ticket holder, expecting a sellout for that one, so don't hang around. And if you were hoping to go to the Fulham away leg on Saturday and you've not got a ticket already, don't even bother. They have all gone. 2,000 tickets sold out by the end of, I think it was about 3 o'clock they'd gone.
Yeah.
By the time they'd reached the second category of sales, which I think was 3,000 royalty points.
It was.
And the voice you just heard is one of the lucky ones. Dave, you've got your hands on a golden ticket.
I have my hands on a Fulham ticket. Yes, indeed. I rocked up at the stadium at 8 o'clock this morning. There was already a queue of about 20 people there. And by the time they opened the doors, there must have been a queue of about 60 people there already. So I was one of the first people there.
Yeah, it's not in any way surprising, is it, Mark, to see this one sell out, given who it is, the time it is?
No, I was kind of wondering if we get a Yorkshire trip on the 5:30 kickoff on the Sunday, would that sell out? I mean, it probably would have.
The midday kickoff.
Sorry, midday, yeah. A 5:30 Saturday kickoff in London is going to go like that, isn't it?
Yeah. We have seen some disappointed, understandably disappointed Reading fans. I mean, I'm one of them. I missed out on a ticket. I only have 2,500 royalty points for my sins, being the massive plastic fan that I am.
I didn't even have a season ticket holder, so I wasn't. They based for Burton. They didn't even say if you're not a season ticket holder, you got a chance. And then for Fulham, it was like, yeah, on like the 30th of May, we'll give you a chance to buy a ticket
after the final.
Yeah.
I'm one of those disappointed persons. I can't get a ticket. If you're contemplating trying to get a ticket in the home end, you're going to struggle because they're not selling to anyone who doesn't have a previous purchase history. Not saying there aren't ways of doing it, but this won't be a case of being able just to sign up en masse like I think some people were doing for like the Arsenal Cup game.
Yeah.
So you're going to struggle here. A lot of people taking umbrage with the 2,000 ticket limit. Now, there's some slight confusion about who exactly has agreed this rule, but it seems to be across the playoffs they've agreed this 2,000 figure. So that goes for both Sheffield Wednesday and Huddersfield fans as well as Reading and Fulham fans in the same fixture. Why this has been done, I don't know. I don't know whether it's just to avoid controversy and just say a flat limit. The tickets were £20 as well, which was nice to see. Fulham reciprocating 20 is plenty, which is nice. So again, this was completely out of the club's hands. This wasn't a scenario where Reading could request more tickets or Fulham seemingly turn them down. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is, Dave.
It is. It's a very strange one. I had a little bit of a debate of what the club would do and with regards to both halves of the south stand on Hobnob within sort of the days before the Burton game. And it seems very strange, given the four clubs in the playoffs, Sheffield Wednesday, Huddersfield, Fulham and Reading, can all give at least 4,000 tickets in the, you know, the smallest allocation potentially is 4,000 away tickets. And they'd sell. They would all sell. Obviously, you know, the bittersweet is, of course, you know, if we obviously end up with Fulham, the argument is, well, why should we give Fulham, you know, 4,000 tickets? But then, you know, Fulham will be turning around and saying exactly the same thing about us. But Reading fans want 5,000 tickets. You know, they want, you know, which the Putney End can hold. So there's an element of, you know, every club wants their cake and eat it and to eat it at the same time. So you can see why they do it, because it's fair. But then at the same time, why didn't they stipulate, you know, because certainly where the EFL is concerned, the spectacle would be as far as I'm concerned, far greater, far better if you had packed away ends with 4,000, minimum 4,000 away supporters there. But then, of course, you know, you end up with a scenario where home supporters that can't all, you know,
yeah,
all necessarily get tickets.
I do legitimately question whether Fulham are going to sell out. Because, well, I mean, what's the stadium? What's the capacity of Craven Cottage?
25-ish.
Do you think they'll sell that out?
How many playoff campaigns have they had before?
Well,
not many.
Yeah, I mean, I think they will, but just as it were. I don't think it's going to be clean sweep, because they do, even for when Man United come in the Premier League, they still had that whole Putney End go to the away fans, because they had the sort of pseudo-neutral section,
yeah,
which they've begun putting a strip of segregation in, but then you still see fans in the like pseudo-neutral section again.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's going to be a neutral section for the playoffs, so it's an interesting one. They've never been the best supported club in the world, but again, I would feel quite bad if we stopped 2,000 home fans going for the Medeski game because we only given 2,500 usually.
Yeah, it's I think you hinted at it, Dave, though. It is actually, in a way, it's going to be an advantage for Reading, because they will only have 2,000 Fulham fans to deal with in that second leg. Not in, I would say deal with, it sounds like a security issue, but deal with in terms of creating a wall of noise and sucking the ball into the net sort of thing.
And it is 2,000, it's not 2,400. If you look at the, I looked at the, because I went and got my my home leg, I paid my, I want to say my ticket, it wasn't actually a ticket at all, you don't get a ticket.
You loaded your member card.
Loaded my member card, there we go. And the person in front of me was looking at the south stand, and they've actually blocked off the first five or six rows, so that's clearly going to be netted, and presumably that's going to be exactly the same for the other side. So they're going to be taking out at least 300-400 seats purely on that, and presumably because it is a flat 2,000 tickets.
Yeah,
it's going to be strange at Hillsborough as well, isn't it? Because you can usually get like that. That away stand at
they've given them the, I think I read they've given them the cop at Hillsborough.
Is that
the away fans? Dave, you've been there.
Is that
the side? It would be very strange with the game in the cop, because the away end is the Leppings Lane end.
Yeah, it's and it's a big stand that as well.
It's huge. I mean, we remember the last away game of the 05-06 season. We took 4,500 fans there and didn't even fill it. So it's a big stand and top tier. So, you know, you'd literally be looking at about, you know, between a third and half of that for the away fans, and it's just like broad blankets of empty seats on either side. Of course, Sheffield Wednesday could play a little bit naughty with that and actually just stick them in the corner and leave the rest of it. But, you know, it's a bit of a strange one, for, you know, given that, you know, no other supporters are going to be sat in there. You know, it's basically empty seats for Sheffield Wednesday, which is a little bit unfair on them, because why should they be punished for having a bigger stadium and a much bigger support base than the other three clubs?
I could have misread it. I just looked at a reply from Sheffield Wednesday saying that they'd given them the cop. So again, maybe that's a...
The cop is the other end.
Yeah.
Which again, you know, isn't logistically impossible, because the Penistone Road is out the back there, and it's an easy exit route. But it'll be interesting to see. It'd be very strange though, because they've never given the cop to away fans, you know, certainly in my lifetime.
Well, again, I do reserve my right. If you're a Sheffield Wednesday fan listening to this, please do correct me on it, and I'll send a tweet out. Anyway, the only other issue along with this is, as mentioned, there's a lot of disappointed Reading fans out there. You know, we talked about it. Reading could have easily sold 5,000, 6,000. I don't think it's outlandish to say 7,000 fans to travel to this game, given what we've taken to some big games in the past.
Yeah.
So there were always going to be fans are disappointed unless you gave them half a Craven Cottage. The debate that's been raging, and this happens every time there is a hot away game, is royalty points. And I don't want to have too long a discussion on this, because I think we've done this on this show's 129 episodes. It's come up more than once. But Dave, in a nutshell, is the system working for you, or do people have a legitimate gripe?
I think the problem you have, there's 2,000 tickets, and it's a high priority, that high demand game. You're always going to get people who are going to miss out. The easiest way, and the fairest way, as far as I'm concerned, is that if you're a season ticket holder, one of the perks of being a season ticket holder is you get first dibs on away games, on high priority away games, and then the royalty points kick in as well. So season ticket holder with royalty points, and a high number of royalty points, you know, you're going to end up with the most loyal fans, the supporters who have dedicated most time and effort into supporting the club. Certainly over the last, when was it, 2004? So certainly over the last 13 years, which is as far as it goes back. So I don't see as there's a problem. Of course, the problem that people have is the system doesn't work for them, because they're not in a high enough bracket. The only thing that I can suggest to them is perhaps, you know, if you're not a season ticket holder, get a season ticket holder. You get first dibs, and maybe if you can, attend more away games to increase your points number.
Mark, you're one of those on the outside of this discussion. What do you think? How do you feel?
Yeah,
as a fan,
I mean,
today?
I've been on both sides of the coins, because I've used to be a season ticket holder. I can't be anymore, because Saturday 3 p.m. is one of the only times I'm guaranteed to be working, and that's going to stay the same for foreseeable future. So I feel bad buying a season ticket, even if it is cheap, because I still would only get to go to half the game. So I'm kind of the persuasion that if you have royalty points, that is in itself enough of a sign that you've been dedicated over the years. A game like Fulham is just a write-off for me. I'm not going to get to a game like Fulham, because I probably don't have the royalty points as much as someone like Dave will. and I can live with the fact that I'm not going to go, because I've been to plenty of big games over my time. If it was a 5,000 allocation, I would say it'd be fair enough to do it. Season ticket and royalty points counting as the same as we go. But as I say, that's because it would personally suit me.
I think, just to add to my previous point, the one thing that concerns me with what I've just said, but could be that people construe that I believe that they're not dedicated and passionate supporters, which isn't the case. I wouldn't question anybody's commitment to supporting Reading Football Club, because life circumstances do dictate what people can and can't do. And to add to that, I've been very, very lucky that royalty points were introduced at a time of life in my very early 20s when I was single. I had a fair amount of disposable income and I was able to go to every single match for 5 seasons in a row. Happened to see the 2 best seasons ever every single minute. On the back of that, you know, I'm relatively young, 35 now. I still see a hell of a lot of football, and those 5 years, and of course, you know, the 2 seasons either side of that, I only missed 2 games. So that's working for me at the moment. Some people aren't so fortunate as that. Some people may have been in their mid 40s at a different time of life. Some people may have been at 10, and so at age of 10, and so reliant on parents on taking them and whatnot. So you know, a lot of the royalty points allocation is based a little bit on life circumstances and luck. Which I'd be lucky enough to accumulate 4,500 points.
Yeah, and that's about the only issue of the whole royalty point system that I maybe have a slight issue with. Now, you can go read John Keane's piece that he wrote back in 2014 around a similar debate when we were selling Brentford tickets, back when going to Brentford was a novelty. So go read that. I retweeted that and put it up on the Facebook page for an overall argument about the royalty point system. But I generally think it's working fine. I agree with both of you. I think it, you know, rewards the right people. The only umbrage I have is kind of what you were saying, Dave, in the time of your life that it is. I do wonder whether now that we are 13 years into the system, is it time to start clawing back some of those points from people? Should you be looking to the fans that for the past 5 years or 6, 7, whatever you want to call it, have been the most loyal? Those that are travelling most recently to the Middlesbroughs, to the Doncasters, over fans that were getting to enjoy, you know, the Emirates, the Etihad, stadiums like that in our Premiership pomp as it was then. Do you think that there is an argument for saying that the royalty points should only count over a certain amount of seasons?
I think you could potentially argue that, but then, you know, certainly over the first 2 seasons, it wouldn't have too drastic an effect, because 2004-05 and 2005-06, you only had 2 points for an away game and 5 points for a home game, and so the effect wouldn't be huge. You'd be losing a couple of hundred points, maybe 300 points, absolute maximum. I think, yeah, certainly for someone like me, though. And as I know we discussed this beforehand, I'm at a stage of life where at the moment I'm not able to actually go to too many away games, but my commitment and dedication to supporting the football club, I would go to more away games if I could do. I would jump at the chance. If they were to remove points from 5, 6, 6, 7, 7, 8 maybe, I think I would then potentially, and other people in my situation would be penalised for ongoing support, for longevity of support, you know. And so I can see both arguments.
Yeah, I was going to say. So you're a favour of looking at the longer term, Mark? Any variations on that?
Yeah, I think the same argument is that life circumstances, like a couple of years ago in the 2012-13 season in the Premier League, I was at uni, so my royalty points took a massive hit in terms of what I'd be going to before. And if that's considered the arbitrary point that we include, then you sort of, people suffer. I think the idea is that if you just keep having them and in 30 years' time you still have them, then everyone's life circumstances kind of equal out a little bit. And yeah, you can say the young people and the new supporters do get a bad deal out of that, but at the end of the day, we're Reading. You can go to 85-90% of away games without any issue whatsoever, mm-hmm. so long as you have the time and money. It's not a case of we're a Leeds or Man United where there's such a massive fervour for these tickets.
Yeah, I do have a little bit more sympathy, though, for the recent fan. And if you take that logical argument to its conclusion, though, you will be looking at a situation in 10-15 years' time where us lot sat around in our late 30s and 50s are just completely blocking out any new fan that is going into their early 20s.
I don't think that's necessarily true, because you get a 10% or roughly a 10% kind of
churn
every season in terms of season ticket holders. And on top of that, you get the new supporter. But you know, the whole concept of royalty points is effectively making supporters earn the right to go to this particular game. And so, you know, if you want to earn that right, then you go to the likes of Scunthorpe on a Tuesday night in 2010, or you know, Huddersfield back in February on a Tuesday night, or you know, you buy, you know, you go to as many games as you possibly can. You know, it earns the right for the dedicated supporter who does go to the vast majority of games over the period.
Yeah, my final point is I'd agree with that, because I was at Scunthorpe on a Tuesday night in 2010. So I'd like to, maybe if that's the game we consider the most important of all.
2-2 draw or 2-0 win?
Oh, no, 2-0 win. Was that 2011?
That's 2011, yeah.
Also a Tuesday night.
Yeah,
Hart.
There is no perfect solution. I said everyone is going to favour a system that works better for them. So again, I said I didn't want to have a debate on it, and we spent about 10 minutes on it. So there you go. My word
maybe
is dirt.
We can edit
when it comes
down and just
yeah. What do you think about royalty points?
Yes, that's very good. End.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. We'll move on. Yeah, the wonders of the editing process. But no, I said it's a system that you're never going to please anyone. That was the kind of key point in John Keane's piece that I flagged up earlier. There is no truly perfect system, but this is the one we've got. As I said, I personally favour some sort of a rolling period of qualification, but I completely understand those that think, you know, you shouldn't be penalised for what's happened recently. You know, you've earned those points, keep them. So
I think just thinking off the top of my head, maybe there could be some system where points aren't actually deducted, but they also look at the short-term purchasing history as well.
Well, the only other thing that I can suggest going forward is that they just open up the brackets and go to a ballot system, and just say instead of having, you know, your 3,500 and your 3,000 and your 2,500, you just say anyone over 2,000, you go into a ballot, and you might get lucky and you might not. That could be another way of doing it. But then I suppose you would say, well, then what's the point of getting above it? But again, we're talking about theoreticals and stuff that isn't going to happen. But if you do have suggestions, by all means, email them into the show at thetarlestend@gmail.com. Or if you fancy writing an article about it, as I said, John Keane wrote one a few years ago, but that doesn't mean you can't have your say. This is exactly what thetarlestend.com is for. We are here for fans. We're written by fans. So if you've got a case, you've got a system you want to propose, you know what? Chuck it in an email, write a few hundred words on it, and we'll be more than happy to publish. So anyway, with that in mind, speaking of people that have contributed and wanted to get their thoughts in, we will move on to the mailbag.
The Tarlehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlehurstend.com.
So as mentioned, it's thetarlestend@gmail.com for your emails, at thetarlestend on Twitter, and we're at facebook.com/thetarlestend, not to mention our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thetarlestend. And before I go any further as well, I have to thank those of you who have joined into the Patreon campaign at patreon.com/thetarlestend. It's our crowdfunding scheme. It's how you basically support this show financially. If you like what we do and you think, you know what, these guys, they're doing a good job, well, I like what they're doing, keep it up. Just stick a couple of quid into Patreon. I've said it before, it's like our tip jar. If you like what we do, if you want to see more things, if you like the YouTube videos and things like that, the only reason we can do it is because we get donations. You know, I'm happy to put my hand in my pocket to a point, and I have done it since running the Tarlehurst End in 2011, but it very much helps if, you know, you have the extra money to buy those new microphones, buy new headphones, buy video equipment and all that bits and pieces. And it's kind of overwhelming at times, the amount of people that have rallied to the cause and continue to give whatever they can. So thank you to those of you who have done so, including this week to Andy Brown. Head over to patreon.com/thetarlestend for more information, or just drop us an email, again, to thetarlestend@gmail.com. Anyway, without further ado, you don't have to give us your money just to make an impact on this show. Plenty of people have taken time to do so in the mailbag, as they do every week. And we will start with Joel Frain. He says, I have one for the mailbag. If Hal Robson-Kanu was still around, would you have him in the lineup?
No.
Mark?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's a true. I'm sorry, you're not through to the next round, Hal. He has done nothing, especially since moving to West Brom, to convince me that he has changed as a player at all.
No, exactly that. I think Jan Kermigan is a step up.
Yeah,
at 18 goals and a massive defensive capability proves.
Yeah, I don't think I've, and again, I don't think he's. You sit there and say he's a substantial upgrade on Roy Behrens or Gareth McCleary either.
No.
So,
in fact, Behrens has contributed more goals and assists this season than Hal Robson-Kanu did in the last four, I believe.
Yeah. So there we go. Fairly emphatic. Sorry, Hal, if you're listening. I don't think you are. Laura Royal says, we owe Fulham for the 2008 relegation. Got to be stronger quick against them, so who do you think should play? We'll come on to that in any other business. Louis Burton says, would you take this playoff squad over any other Reading playoff squads? Now, Dave, this is pertinent to you, given that today, up on the thetarlhurstend.com, you can read your look back on the 2000-2001 playoffs team and that run. And the day before, stood up on the front page, is my retrospective of the 94-95 playoff campaign. And in both of those articles, and the ones going forward this week, you'll be able to give your views on... You'll be able to read our views, sorry, on who we would pick out of both teams. How did it come out for you?
What did I do? 2001. I mean, it came out 6-5, didn't it, in terms of the actual comparison between now and then.
Who won?
I think it was the 2001 squad that got 6.
Yeah, it was.
And that was more, not necessarily down to the individual quality of player, it was also down to the impact of said player. So I put Matthew Robinson ahead of Jordan Obita, I believe.
Robinson over Blackett.
Blackett, yeah. And Ady Williams over Paul McShane, based on the fact that although the two defenders were markedly similar in terms of when they were both at their pomp, Ady Williams gets it because he's a Reading lad. So in terms of pure quality, I think, this is a difficult one, because I think 08-09 actually in individual player quality was a very, very, very good squad.
Oh, massively. Doyle, Kitson.
Little, BK. Hanneman. So, would I take that? If both teams are at their pomp and you put them against together, both teams on the pitch, 11v11, who would come out? You'd have a markedly different, massive clash in styles of play, for example. It'd be very, very difficult to actually pick one over the other.
Mark, any teams immediately spring to mind that you'd have ahead of this one?
Yeah, the 08-09 one, I think, is the highest in terms of individual quality. The only problem is that in the playoff spell, they were in the worst run of form that team had been in 3-4 years. And if you take them, as we said at the start of the season, then they'd beat any of the teams. But if you take them into the team that went into the playoffs, I think they'd have lost to a lot more teams than Burnley.
Yeah, Simon Church starting.
The second leg,
the desperation that Copper was going through.
180 minutes of dominating Burnley and losing 3-0 on aggregate is still a tough one to take. We did dominate those two games.
And also I think sometimes you're clouded by what the players have gone on to do since and their overall contributions. I mean, I look at the 2011 team, and I actually think that 2011 team that played Swansea, I think is... I would probably put it above this team now. I think you look at Kebe, you look at Long, the key damage players, I think, are better, but is the overall quality greater? I don't know. So it's going to be interesting to see how the articles come up throughout the week. I just had the 94-95 team edging it as well by 6-5.
I was going to mention the 94-95 side simply because there was that side played arguably the most exciting football in the playoffs. They were they defied all expectations, even more so than what we've done this season. And a lot of the players back in a time when you actually when supporters had a connection with the players, with likes of Dylan Kerr actively having banter with the South Bank in the middle of a game.
I think that 94-95 team is probably the most comparable in terms of quality and sort of makeup, because that team as well had lots of people that not necessarily stars. You had people come into the twilight of their career. You had young players on the way up.
You had players, I think, in that squad that could easily and seamlessly fit into this
yes,
squad in the
summer. Yeah, I mean,
Dovcek.
I mentioned that.
And Osborne.
Even Ady Williams.
Ady Williams as well. Exactly. Dylan Kerr would have thrived in this side, particularly as a wing back. Michael Jilks. I mean, we actually played a 3-5-2, didn't we?
We did,
in the playoffs. So you had Michael Jilks at wing back.
Yeah, no,
Scott Taylor. You know, they could all play. They, you know, they could all put themselves about, but they could all play. They wouldn't have had a problem fitting into this team.
Yeah. So yeah, please check out. Go to thetarlhurst.com over the course of the week. I said tomorrow will be 2002-2003, and then every day since we'll look up in the build-up to Saturday. Hugh Van Dyle says at the back, 5 or 4. For Craven Cottage, we'll answer that again in any other business. Alison, who has been on this good show many a time, well, I say many times, I think she's been on a couple of Christmas specials, at least one.
She has. Hey, Pally, I'll do.
She says, on most threads I've seen, Reading have been written off for winning the playoffs. Why do you think this is?
Because we've been unconvincing for the majority of the season, perceived to be.
Yeah, but I think also a lot of pundits like Fulham because they're considered, even though we are the second most passing team in the Championship, they are the first. So they are the popular entertainment option, I think, as well. And that obviously does well for the cameras.
I think, of course, what you also got to recognise is that Fulham can turn it on against absolutely anybody in this division. And they have done at Huddersfield, at Newcastle, obviously against us. We've felt them. But at the same time, when they actually played us at the Cottage back in December, at that point in time, they'd only had 3 home wins, I think. And so
very inconsistent team.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, they've lost silly games. I think they lost 4-0 at home to Bristol City, for example. They certainly had a heavy defeat, and may not have been Bristol City, but it was certainly very early in the season. But at the same time, you know, they did the double over Newcastle. I think they took points off Brighton.
Yeah, we've got an article coming up of you from the Town End with the Fulham fan, our friends over at Costages Confidential, our fellow SB Nation homies. They've actually, you'll be able to read it, they've got a great stat looking at Fulham's record against the top six compared to the rest of the teams in the playoffs, and I think they are streets ahead. I think their goal difference against the top six was plus 13.
In points terms, they're only 1 point ahead of us.
Mm.
In goals terms, they've scored 17.
Yeah.
Against in the 6 games.
Where they struggled was taking on the worst teams, which is where Reading cleaned up pretty much this season.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
We didn't really stumble at all against the very worst.
They drew at home to Blackburn and Wolves quite recently, didn't they?
Yeah. So it's funny because they are a team that you can seem to get at them at home, but away from home, they just seem to have been able to turn it on. But anyway, we'll come on to that in much greater detail right at the end of the show. But yeah, as for why Reading have been written off, I think that's a big part of it. I think Reading have also not got a lot of superstars. You know, they've not got this sort of attacking flair of a Sheffield Wednesday when you're talking about the Foresty Aries Rhodes of this world. And they're not the feel-good David Wagner story. Which, do you know what? In a way, it has surprised me, actually, how David Wagner has attracted so much more attention this year than Yap Stam. Despite Yap Stam having that massive profile, I still... Do you get the feeling that he's flown a bit under the radar? Because I certainly do.
Yap Stam, yeah, absolutely. Because he's so understated, he's a bit kind of monotone. He's almost Steve Coppell-like. And, you know, there's the reaction to a defeat and a reaction to a win is almost still a flat line. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, Wagner is you know, he's obviously, you know, between him and Jurgen Klopp, they both obviously have a history together. They're both very similar characters. You know, he's very very enthusiastic on the touchline, as Gary Monk found out, and you know, people like a character, and Yap Stam doesn't have that, you know, that all encompassing character that leaves a good or provides a good story.
Yeah, what I'd add to that is that Stam's considered quite angry by a lot of people. I think they see him as quite a grumpy, you know, like a no nothing, not like a no nothing,
no nonsense
defender, and that's not the most interesting type of person as far as on a human level works. And we've listened to a lot of Stam, loves talking about football, but as you say, Wagner gets involved in all kinds of capers, I think, that is far more newsworthy.
He's much worthy of a TV miniseries than Yap Stam. Is that what you're saying?
Even though Yap Stam is Batman, that is the case.
Very, very true, yes. Fighting crime. And Zora Novakovic says, we finished 5 points above Fulham, yet we're written off by the pundits and bookies alike. Annoying, disrespectful, but could it be in our favour?
Yes. Absolutely, it could be, just like it has been in the past.
I listened to Scott Malone today, who's talking on Sky Sports News, talking about how teams fear them. And I do get that feeling that maybe Fulham might be, there might be a bit of arrogance about that team that Reading could exploit.
Yeah, I think so.
I think, well, it was on Cottages Confidential earlier today, they did their own little stats piece, and it basically said that the first goal is going to be hugely crucial. And I sense that that's going to be true, is that if we get the first goal at Craven Cottage, then, you know, we can kill the game in a large sense because we're good at that. We've won 25 of the 27 games we've scored first in or something like that. So we are a an underestimatable team.
It's chasing a game that absolutely kills you.
Absolutely.
Against Fulham.
And if they score first, then that's going to be very bad for us.
Yeah. I think certainly there's an element. You look at the two games that we played at home against Fulham, the game and half. We'd learnt our lesson. We set up differently, totally differently. I think we'll absolutely see a back three on Saturday. I think we will play a different formation. We will certainly look to nullify their threats out wide, who absolutely annihilated us, particularly the right wing at the Cottage. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as one-sided as that game was.
No.
We'll have learnt a lesson.
Well, fingers crossed. As I've been saying throughout the show, we'll come on to this. Don't you worry. All your Fulham questions will be answered in the end of the show. We'd like to keep you hanging on. Matt Castle says, which players in his current squad do you think could make it in the Premiership? We've sort of had this question a few sort of times in the different guises about which sort of players you'd keep.
Yeah.
I think it's the same sort of names, isn't it? You know, your Liam Moores, your Gunter could probably do a job.
Al Habsi were being around this team.
I think Liam Kelly could thrive in that division.
Yeah. Do you know what the thing is as well that's very difficult about this is until you see players in there, you don't know. I mean, going into 2006-07, you wouldn't necessarily have said Stephen Hunt is going to be one to thrive.
No, exactly.
In that division, and he turned out to be one of the stars of those
and
two seasons.
And Robson Kanu in 2012-13 as well.
Yeah, exactly. So you can say that they've got the potential. You know, Kelly style of player suits it.
I seem to remember a lot of Reading fans absolutely slating Michael Antonio in his few efforts or in his few appearances for Reading, and look at him now.
Exactly. So it'll be everybody's different. Everyone handles that pressure differently. So, but yeah, I think you can sort of guess the main sort of characters. So sorry, but that's a bit of a cop out, Matt. I do apologise. We'll come on to it. Don't you worry. When we get promoted after Wembley, we'll be discussing this in detail. Luke Jarrett, have you seen Dave Kitson's Instagram post about the 106-point season and what's your take on it?
No, we've not seen it at all. What's he done?
Yeah, I don't know. He's taken umbrage with the treatment, what he perceives to be the treatment of the team in 2000, from 2005, 2006. I'm not going to discuss this too much here because I will have an article up on the Tilehurst End that sort of looks into sort of trying to separate the fact from fiction about it. But gents, either of you two got any brief thoughts just from the top of your head?
It seemed a very strange time to do what or to say what he did. But I'm not really going to make too much comment other than I think it's...
It's just unfortunate all round, isn't it?
Based on what we know, I think it's a little bit unfortunate, a little bit misplaced.
Mark?
Yeah, I'm leaning towards that side as well, purely on the basis that I think we spoke to a couple of the old players and saw their off-the-record takes on it, and a lot of them are still playing as well. And if they're still playing, then they're less likely to come and do the golden gamble draw at half-time. I don't know exactly what Kitson wants. Time will tell.
Yeah, and as I said, we will have a lot more on this. I'm putting an article together in between editing this very fine show. So hopefully keep an eye out for that either late tonight as you listen to this or tomorrow at some stage. So hopefully, as I said, we're going to try and delve through and see if he's got points to make. So either way, as I said, it's just an unfortunate distraction really during a week when we should be looking at the playoffs. Anyway, moving on. Nat says, given our last visit, what should Saturday's tactics be? Park the bus, and what's changed since December? Come on to that shortly. Jack Simons, is there any players you'd take from the other playoff teams if we got promoted? I'm going to limit this to one player per team. I'd love to have Sessegnon from Fulham, just saying it.
Kearney from Fulham, please.
Okay. Dave?
Forestieri.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard to argue with any of those. Alex Everson, 100%, he's talking about the ticket issue here. He says, 100% people are going to complain about the point system again. Not moaning, I've missed out, but a progressive point system works better. Otherwise, how do your newer, but still loyal fans ever get the chance to experience bigger games? And again, I think we've tackled that one in detail. So go back and listen to News Bites if you're just tuning in there. So, but thanks for the question, Alex. And to everybody, I really do appreciate those. And keep them coming in. So we will definitely have at least one more show this season. Maybe and hopefully another one between the two playoff games. Anyway, regardless, as we teased throughout the show, we will get into Fulham. It's the playoffs.
The Tilehurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Right, let's do this. Fulham. Playoff semi-final, two legs, 180 minutes plus, you know, maybe a few extra from extra time and penalties, away from Wembley. this was the team throughout the season, and it was a common thing. We were asked numerous times who we wanted to avoid in the playoffs, and I think this was the team that came up time and time again, alongside Leeds, who, yay, we've missed out. We don't have to play them. So they have got the fear factor, as Mr. Malone talked about. Are you scared, Dave?
No, not overly. I think we can beat them. We've shown that we can beat them. We've shown that we're the match of them, certainly at home. I do worry about the number of goals that they've scored at home, but I also think that Yapstam is a highly astute manager and will have learnt a hell of a lot from that 5-0 defeat in December.
45 goals they've scored at home compared to our 48 goals we've conceded on the road, although Reading have scored 33 away from home as well. That's the third best in the division. Mark, you're fearful?
Well, that's the 22nd worst defensive record in the division away from home. Only Forest and Rotherham have conceded more, and that is my fear, as I alluded to earlier. If we score the first goal, I'll be mightily confident that we can hold out, certainly for the first leg. If we concede the second goal, then I'll be deeply worried that they can go and knock in 2 and 3 post haste.
I think the key to it, of course, we've got to remember, is it's not just a 90-minute game of football; it's 180. So, the key to it will be, if they do score the first goal, keeping it within touching distance. Because if Fulham are let off the leash, then I think it could be tie over by full time on Saturday. But I can't see that, based on what Yapstam knows of them, how we're going to set up, that they are going to, that they'll create chances, and I think we're going to definitely have to score maybe twice. But I just can't see them absolutely wiping the floor with us based on how we know playoffs go generally.
Mark, who's got the better team on paper? If you had to pick one of those two teams, I mean, I'll go through the Fulham team. They've got Bettinelli in goal, they've got Odie Malone, Tim Ream, Thomas Callas, Tom Kearney, a guy's name, is it Kebano? Cabano? I don't
Not
know.
Sure.
Lucas Pearson, we've heard of him. Sonny Luco, Ken McDonald, Chris Martin. Then you've got the likes of Johansson, Sessegnon, Button. Scotty Parker still going. Ryan Fredericks as well. And Ayiti. I'm sorry for butchering all those names. Do apologise, Fulham fans. But yeah, looking at those two teams, which squad would you rather have, Mark?
I think for a championship season, I think we probably just edge it as we have for the season, because you've got the players in there. I mean, Kermigan, you can pretty much cancel out with Martin. I would say the experience of McShane and Moore at the back is greater than what they have. And also Al Habsi behind them is also an advantage over their goalkeeper. They have more potential in that they're young players. Callas, Sessegnon, Kearney are all potentially very good Premier League players. Whereas at the moment, there is that potential for them to lose it in a game.
Which team would you have, Dave?
I think, similar to Mark, I think ours. I think Fulham's is a team whose time will come. It's certainly not, if not next season, if they don't go up, then certainly the season after, if they can maintain it and keep it together. I certainly think we have a lot more nous about us. Certainly a lot more experience, certainly with the likes of McShane at the back. Liam Moore has experience at the top end of this division and Premier League experience. Of course, Ali Alabsi, FA Cup winner at Wigan. You look at our side, and generally, with the exception of perhaps, you look at the central midfield, Liam Kelly and John Swift, who aren't exceptionally experienced. Everywhere else appears to be a lot more experienced than the Fulham side. But
well, let's talk team selection then. We've had lots of questions on what would you do formation-wise, who would you play, what are your two teams? Let's start formation-wise from the both of you. Is it five at the back or four, which is the basic, only two options really?
Five.
Yeah, I'm agreed with you. Especially, I might be more open to a back four at home, but away from home.
Yeah, we'll see how the tie progresses as to whether we play four at the back at home, but certainly five for the first.
Who lines up in it then? As mentioned at the top of the show, we saw McShane and Allori back at Burton. Dave, I'm going to ask you this because you're in the best place.
I would be an absolute 100% advocate of Ilori, McShane and Moore at the back.
So Blackett misses out.
Blackett misses out.
Yeah, and Vandenberg is probably the person I would have in the back three ahead of Blackett as well. So I'd say hit Vandenberg off the bench is more useful because he's a bit more versatile. I don't think he'd have started Ilori at Burton unless he thought he was genuinely going to have a chance of starting him at Fulham as
the
well.
The only change I would make is Ilori played on the right-hand side of the back three.
Did he?
Yes. I would put him on the left and attempt to use his pace to counteract that Fulham right-hand side.
I imagine that it's that he's probably playing on the right to counteract Sessegnon. He plays down the left a lot, doesn't he? So that's probably the thinking behind it. They want that quick option on the right-hand side. That would be my.
I'm just thinking of Ryan Fredericks as well, who is lightning quick.
Side, isn't it really?
I presume you're going to beat her at left back then ahead of Blackett as well.
I'd have him at left wing back, yes.
Yeah,
and Gunter is pretty much picks himself.
Yeah.
Notice there, Dave saying that Gunter picks himself, just for the record. In front of them, then we've seen George Evans get a lot of minutes in the last couple of games. Mm-hmm. Does he keep his place ahead of Vandenberg and Danny Williams?
He had a very steady game at Burton, I think so. Yeah, he's a cultured and calm, composed head in that midfield.
Okay, Evans in your team, Mark?
I expect him, like I said, for Ilori, because he played at Burton. I expect him to start, but I wouldn't be averse if he puts Williams in. I'd have Evans and Swift as my two.
I actually think that he will play Danny Williams and George Evans.
Yeah, there's a good chance.
I think one of Swift and Kelly is going to miss out.
I tend to agree with you.
I think Kelly I'd rather have on the bench, especially the way he has impacted games off the bench, has been very positive before, like Bristol City away, etc. So I'd have Kelly as my preferred man on the bench.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I almost might lean to... It's difficult picking between the two. I don't think there's a lot between them, but I think Swift has got that bit better of a goal threat. So I think... Yeah. And I say actually set pieces, they're kind of much of a muchness. What about in front of them then? So you've got your two players to play in your forward positions. Kermigan picks himself. Who goes alongside him? If McCleary's fit, is it him? Is it Behrens?
Joseph Mendes.
Is it Mendes, yeah? Graben?
I wouldn't be averse to having Mendes. I don't think it will be. I think he's more likely to do Behrens because he trusts Behrens, Stam.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's true.
He does a different job to Kermigan. He'll add a bit more pace.
It's a bit more Behrens type of game as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be a physical game. It's going to be a technical game.
You say about that Burton third goal. Was it Behrens who did the cutback for Kermigan?
It was, yeah.
And that is the type of goal I think we'll be scoring at Fulham.
Yeah, I agree with you both. I think the trust factor is going to be massive for Stam in this one. And I think he's not going to want to stake his managerial reputation on gambling. And I also think that when you have people like McCleary, if he's, say, only 50% fit still... Graben, people, you have these options on the bench to change it if it is going badly. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you start with these players, I'm not sure that then putting on Behrens is going to change a game. Does that make sense? Am I making sense?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, the bench, theoretically, the bench we've just picked is Vandenberg, Graben, McCleary, Kelly. I mean, that's good
Blackett
a bench
and...
as you can really imagine, isn't it, at this level?
Yeah. Blackett, Mendes, probably taking the other ones and alongside.
Maybe Popper or someone like that. So,
yeah, I know. Jordan Much nowhere near your team. What a shame.
Oh, no.
Or Reece Oxford,
yeah. So, yeah, that's how we go for it team-wise. What are your gut feelings then? How's this going to go? The bookmakers have got Fulham 3-5 just to win this first leg. The draw is 14-5 and Reading are round about 5-1.
5-1 is huge.
I know, even I've stuck a tenner on that because it's just... Has a team ever been that far off odds? I mean, we don't know this, but going into the playoffs, a team at 5-1, especially having finished
to win
third,
a one-off game,
especially
I mean, the odds to qualify over the two legs, Fulham are 7-4 on, Reading are the opposite; they're 7-4 against. So yeah, very nearly 2-1 on Reading to qualify here.
I think we'll lose the first leg. Genuinely speaking, I think we'll lose the first leg, but I don't think it will be a heavy defeat. I think we'll be a one goal margin.
I can see a pair of 1-0s and talking about extra time and penalties. And oh my, I just can't even bear thinking about a penalty shootout at the Medeski.
No,
just...
I think that if Fulham are going to score in the first leg, and I also fear that if
have
they're
going to... Fulham's penalty record this season, though?
Awful.
Do rebounds count?
I was going to say.
Well, they missed one at the Mazda, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah, that won us the game. I think Fulham are going to score.
Yeah.
And if they score, I think they'll get two. So I think they'll win 2-1 on the first leg.
So, are Reading making it? On the basis that maybe we're not going to do another show. Are we going to be doing another show talking about Wembley?
I think it's going to be very close. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. Certainly the bookies think.
This is going to come down to the refereeing single moments, the single decisions of a player. I think a lot of it's going to come down to team selection.
If whose head gets in the way of the ball.
Have we had a refereeing appointment into this game yet?
Don't believe so, not that I've seen.
No, I think so.
While you talk, I shall look this very fact up, but carry on.
Yeah, we've just picked a team for Stam. Stam can very easily disagree with us and go and pick a completely different team, in which case a lot of my faith will drain away very quickly.
Yeah, it's that first leg, isn't it? It's the fear factor and why we've talked about in other shows and across the YouTube channel and things about, do we want the home leg first? There is that fear factor, and I don't think it goes away, and I don't think it's unreasonable either when you look at it going, do you want to risk that Craven Cottage factor in the first game? Because Reading chasing, even at home,
we discussed this the other week, didn't we? We suggested that we would like
the home leg first.
Yeah. And potentially hold on to a lead. But, you know, it is what it is. We finished third. We are, how many points are we ahead of Fulham?
Six points ahead of them. Something like that.
We won 26 games this season. There's no reason why we can't win one or two more.
Yeah, and we won at Sheffield Wednesday. We won at Villa. Both of those very hard places to go. And we didn't do too badly at Newcastle. We didn't do too badly at Huddersfield. So these are the type of games, you know, if it comes down to sort of 81st minute 1-0 Fulham win, would we take that?
I'd take it.
Because that gives us a good chance.
I don't think you're going to necessarily go all hell for leather to gain that equaliser at that point in time. If it's 1-0, then I think you play your usual game and you take it. If it's 1-0 in the second leg, of course, then you know, different kettle of fish altogether, of course. But this is the key thing to the playoffs. So we shouldn't be absolutely busting a gut to get an equaliser if we're 1-0 down, because we've got 90 minutes at home and we're having won 16 of our 23, 17 of our 23 games, was it? 16, 17? Okay. 17, wasn't it?
16 and a half, let's cut it in the middle.
No refereeing appointments have yet been made for the semifinals. I imagine that will come out in the next day or two. I'm sure we'll have an article up on the website, so stay tuned for that. Iggy, final question then before we wrap up the show. Are you nervous getting into this playoff campaign?
No, not really. As I said at the top of the show, in the days when we were thinking that Reading deserved every year to be in the playoffs, I was far more nervous that we'd screw it up, whereas this year, I didn't expect us to be anywhere near here. So it's kind of lack of pressure.
Yeah, I'm not, no. Different reasons, really. I mean, we've, back in 95, back in 2001, and certainly going into in the final days of the seasons succeeding that, nerves were abound when we had something to play for. Obviously, we've got something to play for, but we've been there before. We know what the playoffs are about as supporters. Those of us that have been around certainly since 2005. This is our third playoff campaign, so there's no reason to be nervous. We just accept. We know that they're a lottery. They're a human lottery, and you just have to accept what happens. You know, if Tony Rougier's head does get in the way of the ball, or if Fabian de Freitas does come off and give his only meaningful contribution to English football at Wembley, these are the things that happen in playoffs.
And if Jem Karachan's shot hits the post, and Gary Monk manages to fling himself in the way of the second shot.
Yeah.
And if Andre Bique goes ape something.
Yeah, and I'm still, 22 years later, I'm still campaigning for Jason McAteer to retrospectively be given a red card for scything down Gilksy. I will get justice for you.
He'd already been booked as well, hadn't he?
Yeah.
That was the worst thing.
Don't get me started. Horrific. Anyway.
Yeah.
Peter
Folks, I believe, was the referee.
Just think, in a couple of weeks' time, we'll have another one of those stories where we're absolutely furious that this happened.
This is the beauty of the playoffs with Reading, though, is our failures. You can pretty much pin on one single moment.
It's toss of a coin, isn't it?
Yeah. So, in 95, the penalty. 2001, Rougier's head. 2003, forced to get injured.
Yeah.
2009, BK's mad moment. 2011, hitting the post. Yeah, these are the game turning things that you can just pin on and suggest why.
I'm blaming 2011 on Zurab personally, and
he did lose the head.
And Mr. Scott Sinclair, or is it Mr. Helen Flanagan? I don't know whatever you want to call him these days. Mr. I'm just bullying the Scottish Premier League. Anyway, well done, Brendan. You know, that whole unbeaten season. Give you some credit.
Found your home.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, That's it.
Level.
There is nothing more we can say. You've just got to sit back, strap in and enjoy it, whether it's your first playoff campaign or if it's your sixth. You know, at the end of the day, this is what being a football fan's about. It's about the highs and lows. You know, I still, despite losing in the Cardiff final, I wouldn't trade it. You know, I'd take it all over again just for the Wigan, the joy after the Wigan game.
Hell yeah.
The pain at 95 at Wembley again, you get the brilliance of Tranmere away. You know, the hope springs eternal in all of those games, and they're moments you remember as a football fan. So enjoy it. As I said, if you've not got your ticket for the home leg, hurry up because you're probably going to miss out. If you are one of those 2,000 fans heading to Craven Cottage, you better make some damn noise because you're taking our seat. You're taking my seat, you're taking Mark's seat. And if I see you sitting on your hands at Craven Cottage, we're going to send Dave after you.
I'll fall asleep. I'll probably have too much to drink.
Hashtag drink aware. Yeah, we'll send our own
London's incredible Hulk after you.
Please stay tuned to thetarlesend.com over the weekend. We'll have lots of build up, and not to mention all of the reaction and analysis. We will have a YouTube post game show. I do apologise for not having one up after Burton. It was my birthday, so I was out.
What kind of excuse is that?
I know, terrible. Terrible.
As long as you're wearing orange on your night out.
Yeah, on the night before. Well, it was nearly orange in the morning after, but that's a different story.
Too many WKDs.
Yeah, I was having a Jamie Vardy-style party. Someone did actually buy me two bottles of Smirnoff Ice as my birthday present, which goes to show you my drinking history. Anyway, now we're talking about Smirnoff Ices.
That's not that bad a drink, particularly if you mix it with lager and get yourself a Turbo Shandy.
Well, the VKs are back in. Our VKs are cool. That's what the students drink.
Mark, hashtag drink aware. Kids, drinking's not cool.
But I mean, nothing wrong with VK ice.
Students.
I used to drink when
students.
I was a student.
Yeah.
Wouldn't see me dead with it now. But
drink responsibly and please be over 18.
Unless we get promoted, in which case, you know, go hell for it.
Those are the words. Those are the words and personal opinions of Mark Mayo. And do not reflect those
I'll be in the purple towel.
Of the Tarlhurst End or its subsidiary companies or whatever they put in legal disclaimers these days. Anyway, that is the show done. We'll hopefully try and get a show out on Monday, depending on what happens in the first leg. Of course, if we lose 4 or 5-0, you might excuse us for taking a hike on that one. But anyway, stay tuned. We're off to do a very quick Pub Chat Extra, looking back at some of our favourite playoff memories. And stay tuned as well on Friday. Myself and Mark will be doing a bit of a history lesson for those of you who do want to catch up on our playoff history. So, in the meantime, more than ever, come on you Ars.
Come on you Ars.
Social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.